This is The Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. My guest today is Lenore Scanese, a journalist and activist dubbed the world's worst mom for letting her 9-year-old son ride the New York subway alone back in 2008. Since then, she's become the co-founder with psychologists Peter Gray and Jonathan Haidt of Let Grow, a nonprofit that's changing laws and school programs to restore independence to kids. She's also become a regular contributor to Reason Magazine. We discuss why children today are more anxious and less free than they used to be, how fear and overparenting took over American childhood, and why the free-range movement for both kids and adults is finally on the rise. Here is The Reason Interview with Lenore Scanese. Lenore Scanese, the big Mama Thornton of free-range parenting, thank you for talking to Reason.
Thanks, Papa.
you have a TED Talk out. Mm-hmm. The event took place this spring. Mm-hmm. And you talked about, you know, the Let Grow movement, or the Let Grow, the foundation that you started. And we'll talk about that in a little bit in more detail. And about free-range parenting. Mm-hmm. What's the key message to your TED Talk?
It is that we should spend less time with our kids.
Yeah. I think everyone wins, right?
Everyone does win, and everybody's been losing when the opposite became the sort of guiding ethos for parents today. I mean, the Surgeon General did a, you know, giant study, and it said kids are more depressed and anxious than ever. And then 2 years later, he was moved to do another giant study, and it was that parents are more depressed and anxious than ever. I'm like, that's not a coincidence.
Right. So explain that, because in the talk, and there'll be links to it in the show notes, so if, you know, people can find it easily. You talk about how it's kind of over the past 20 or 30 years, it seems that this rise of kind of panopticon childhood, where, you know, kids are always in view of adults somewhere or being structured by adults. Where does that come from?
Oh, that's the big question. I thought you were going to ask for examples of that, and I have so many amazing examples.
Start with examples.
Well, the University of Michigan did a poll, and then more recently Harris did a poll, and both of them found that about 50% of parents won't let their kids go to another aisle at the store. And the University of Michigan study was about kids 9 to 11.
Yeah.
So that's pretty locked down. The Harris poll found that most kids interviewed 500 kids age 8 to 12 and found that the majority have rarely or never walked around their own neighborhood without an adult. Mm-hmm. And the majority said they're never allowed to be in public without an adult. And by public, we said, like, you know, at the store or street or a park, anywhere, never allowed to be out there without an adult. So those are my examples of what's going on.
Think about this for a second. If those kids are, say, you know, between 9 to 12 or thereabouts, so, you know, based on the two polls you were talking about, like, their parents are what, like around 40 or 50?
Yeah, let's say they had them at 30.
Okay.
So their parents are 40, let's say.
Yeah. And so are
now
those...
Now we have to do the math again.
Yeah, I know.
Please don't do that. Not on TV.
No. So are those kids themselves, were they raised in kind of the lockdown? Are they the second generation of, you know, are they? Or,
well,
you know,
all right, now we really have to do our math. Let's say it's 2020.
Because this kind of started, and I know we've talked about this. I used to write a lot about this in the 90s when I joined Reason.
You wrote the piece on this.
Well, I appreciate that. Right. Just about how much less time, less free time that kids have. But towards the end of the 90s in particular, it was, you know, people like Hillary Clinton, she had endless White House initiatives on, you know, the well-being of children. And there was this palpable sense, and it was shared by Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals, that kids were growing up in a kind of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome world. They were either going to, you know, they were either being made brain dead by eating too many hot dogs and cheese sticks, or they were going to be kidnapped. And we didn't call it trafficking back then.
No.
You know, but
before it was rebranded.
And what is most stunning is just how, like, that's completely at odds with the actual risks that present to children.
Yeah.
Could you talk, before we go to the causes, talk a little bit about, you know, how unlikely is it that your kid is going to be kidnapped by a stranger?
Well, first of all, I'll tell you what we found in the Harris poll, which is that 50% of parents said that if you have 2 10-year-olds playing at the park unsupervised, they are likely to be abducted. Mm. that is so completely at odds with reality as to be like on another planet, because the actual statistical odds, which were crunched for me a long time ago by Warwick Cairns, a guy in England, said that if you wanted your kid to be kidnapped by a stranger in what they call a stereotypical abduction, which is like a Law and Order type plot.
And this is by a stranger.
By a stranger. Yeah. For this to be statistically likely, the length of time you would have to keep the kids outside is, and I always ask my audiences, and some people say 5 hours, and some people say 5 days, and some people say 5 minutes. And the actual answer is 750,000 Wow. Years.
Years. That's a lot of daycare. Yeah.
That's a lot of daycare.
Yeah. They're not so, you know, and it's also true, you know, for other types of things like children, you know, accidental deaths are down or near zero.
Right.
I mean, across the board, children are safer than ever. So how do you, you know, where is this cognitive dissonance coming from where we're like more worried, increasingly more worried about kids versus them being safer than ever?
There's so many different places, but one is when you said that the kids are safer than ever. I think it has this ironic upshot of us being more worried because it almost never happens. So if it does happen, you must be the worst parent in the world, because the example I like to give is that Lincoln, you know, good old Abe, had four children and only one made it to adulthood. And nobody said, well, that man, he's such a terrible father, because everybody knew.
Well, maybe I suspect John Wilkes Booth did, but, you know, but that was way down the list.
Right. Lincoln, that was 17. Yeah. Anyways, most people thought of him as a decent person.
Yeah.
And yet he was the father of three kids who, you know, died before, maturity. So if that's happening all around you, you don't single out that person. If you're the only person that something terrible happens to, you end up being talked about forever. I feel like Eitan Pates case and the Adam Walsh case.
Yeah, explain who Eitan Pates is.
Eitan Pates was a boy who was 6 years old here in New York City, waiting at a bus stop to go to school, and he was kidnapped in 1979 and murdered. And that was almost the first case that came to the public consciousness as what we think of now as just these kid snatchings. And what was interesting is, when the case first broke, the assumption on the part of the public, like most people, thought, oh, he's this cherubic little kid. It must have been some lovelorn mom, you know, would-be mom picked him up to raise as her own. That was really what was going through most people's heads. And then gradually the story came out, well, maybe it wasn't a mom. What do you mean? Well, maybe it's a guy. Well, why would a guy? Oh, no.
Right.
And it was a match to the gas tank. It was such a compelling
story. Well, and this was coming
story.
At the end of a decade and a half of rising crime and urban violence, right? Particularly in New York.
I guess it was, yeah.
New York 79. In the late 70s was not great. You know, crime rates were up.
Right.
Serial killers only really emerged in the public imagination the way we think about them now.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. The public imagination became seized with the idea of predators. Predators, when I was growing up, were owls.
Right.
You know, they were mountain lions. And then suddenly they were people. And then a few years after the Pates tragedy, Adam Walsh was taken. His father's John Walsh. He started America's Most Wanted. Mm-hmm. And he went around the country saying that every year 50,000 children are kidnapped and murdered, which is grossly at odds with the
And explain
the facts.
What that means. And it's even
it
more than
actually,
that. Kids can be reported. I'm getting all of this from you. Kids can be reported as missing if they're gone for as little as an hour.
Right.
And it's something like 460,000 reports a year.
Oh, it's just tons. I can't remember how. Yeah.
And then,
look at our crime
but the
stats
actual
page,
number of stranger abductions, what we think of when we say kids are kidnapped, is something like 500 or even less.
A little less than that. But as was once pointed out to me, once we're starting to talk about, oh, the numbers are so small, first of all, it sounds callous.
Yeah.
And secondly, parents are unable to think of they're not able to think of the millions that aren't kidnapped. Mm-hmm. You always think of the ones that are. Our brains work like Google.
Right.
And if you ask Google, where's a great place for breakfast around here, it'll come up with five restaurants and you'll go to one of them. But if you ask your brain, is my kid safe you know, walking to school, up come these stories that we have, the Eitan and Adam, and sometimes they are 40 or 50-year-old stories.
I was thinking about this because the other day I saw somebody mention JonBenet Ramsey, it's been like well over a decade, but that
it's been story a generation.
Was, you know, for the 21st century. I think that was since 2000. That was everywhere, and that kind of kept this flame alive.
The picture of her curls is in my brain right now as you say it. And, you know, the availability heuristic, that horrible, weird phrase, just means that the easier it is for your brain to conjure up a picture or a story, the more likely you think it is. And obviously, the stories that we can remember are the ones that wrench our hearts.
Right.
And so we start getting, that's like the beginning of the miscalculation between how likely something is and how much we think about it.
Something else that you raised in the TED Talk, which was interesting, you know, because you said, like, you know, parents are either worried their kids are going to be abducted or they're not going to get into Harvard.
Yes.
And in fact, the likelihood of being kidnapped is slightly less than getting into Harvard, but not by much. But let's talk about that a little bit. How much does the parental fear that our kids are not going to optimize their childhoods to get into whatever we think is going to give them, you know, the perfect life as an adult. How much does that play into this? We got to keep our kids in full view all the time.
Well, what's happened, I think, is not just, it's not Harvard per se.
Right.
And also, who would want to go to Harvard? But it's just.
Just to clarify, your undergrad was at Yale?
It was.
All right. So, so like you or like me, you're somebody who couldn't get into Harvard.
That's so true. Oh, my God, Nick. Now I have to lie down. We have to talk about this for half an hour.
But this this idea, and particularly among, you know, the, I don't know, you know, let's say the top 10% or 20% of parents are really, like, we're all optimizing for everything all the time.
Right.
And we, you know, we worry that if our kids are not, you know, doing baby Einstein or something in the womb, you know, much less they waste a couple of years in grammar school, not being on six different teams and clubs. There's no way they're going to ever amount to anything, right?
Right. Oh, God, there's so much here. The first of all, I just want to talk about whether it's these top 10 or 20% of, you know, go-getters who are worrying about their kids. It's everyone. There was this amazing study done by another Ivy League, Cornell.
Could be the land grant part. You never know.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyways, their study found that across the board, and we're talking about every demographic, you know, race, creed, color, place, you know, geographic place in America, and income, parents thought that the best thing you could do was to put your kids in some structured activity. And if your kid, the example they gave was, and what about if you're making dinner and your kid says, Mommy, I want to draw, what should you do? And most people said, drop what you're doing and go and draw with your kid to encourage them to show that you're on their side. So what's upsetting is this intensive idea of parenting isn't just, you know, the top 2%. It is everyone. And that means that we're all spending all our time and all our money giving kids extra attention, extra time, extra activities that are, first of all, expensive. And then time-consuming, and then for the parents, it's often boring. And so that's why we get to that Surgeon General report again that said the kids are going crazy and the parents are going crazy because the Venn diagram, I mean, what I explained in the TED Talk, which was a friend told this to me and I thought it was really brilliant, is that there used to be, we remember this, kid world, right? You're on your bike, you went and got candy, you got on your bike again, you got more candy, and then in between, maybe you kicked a ball. And then there was the parent world, which was all the boring people talking about ideas, you know, and mortgages. And
this is kind of like the wah-wah-wah.
That's
from
the wah-wah-wah
in
the peanuts, yes.
It's just stuff that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It's like, what is a, you know, APR? And then there was the family world when everyone was together at dinner or on a vacation, at church, at synagogue. And now they got mashed together. And what we really need is to pull them apart again because kids were happier, parents were happier, and they were still bonded. And I think one of the interesting things that's happened is the insinuation that if you're not spending all this time with your kid, somehow your kid doesn't know you love them and maybe you're a bad parent. And here I will transition to a very strange obsession of mine that no one shares, which is that Frito-Lay.
Frito-Lay, maker of Fritos and other corn chip products from Plano, Texas.
Yes, exactly. They make little Fritos corn chip bags to put in your kid's lunch. And I don't know if they're still doing this, but for a while they were. They were putting an empty circle on the bag where you could write a message to show your child that you love them. Mm. And it's not the worst thing in the world, right? Although maybe you'll be doing this very soon, Nick.
Yeah. Well, it's also if you, you know, I could hear people saying, well, if you loved your kids, you would have them give those Frito-Lay bags to other kids so right. that their minds and bodies are dulled so your kid
that's
excels, right?
Yeah, that's
I am saying.
No, my point being that your kid knows you love them. And even if you don't see them from 9 to 3, it doesn't evaporate. Right. But I think, like, if you dig down deep into what's happening in our culture, we're assuming almost nothing is stable, nothing is going to work, nothing you can do is enough, and therefore we have to keep this line of communication almost constant. And then you see it throughout a lot of the rest of childhood now, which is that the daycare center has a camera and you can watch it anytime, and your kid goes away, finally gets away, you know, for 7 weeks to overnight camp. Right. But every day, not only can you get a picture, you can use AI so they don't have to look through all the other pictures and find your kid. And then if they weren't smiling, you know, I saw her at the marshmallow toast. Her marshmallow looked a little burnt. Mm. I know she doesn't like burnt marshmallows. Could you possibly work on that tomorrow? This seemed a little sad.
I'm thinking this is a far cry from my childhood. We're of similar vintage. But I mean, I remember there was a moment where I was raised Catholic and I wanted to go to church on Sunday. I thought we were going to church. And my parents were like, we're not going to go. See if, you know, you can go if you can find your own ride to church. Right. And this is a different galaxy. Right. Than we're in now where kids, you know, or parents are expected not just to drive their kids everywhere, but to show up for every practice, not just the games or not just the big games and things like that.
Do you know the Onion headline? Boy disappointed to see father in stands.
So where, you know, this is primarily driven by parents or adults, right?
I mean,
like very few
point,
kids.
It's the culture.
But, yeah, but I mean,
oh, not driven by the kids.
Yeah,
no.
I mean, like no, mm-hmm. the kids aren't the ones, and you know, and they're gonna say, yeah, you know, come and draw with me while you're doing something or whatever. But like, all of this is put into place by kids, and by adults. Where, you know, is this primarily kind of like a baby boom and Gen X phenomenon originally? And, you know, and I think about people like, you know, Bill and Hillary Clinton were like the first baby boomers in the White House. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they started to lead a kind of child's crusade, like an obsession with the safety of children. Mm-hmm. Gen X famously called themselves latchkey kids. Right. Or, you know, like that's the thing because... Yeah. You know, during the 50s and a good chunk of the 60s, women, adult women dropped out of the labor market for the first time in decades, you know, and certainly since industrialization. So even if everything in the neighborhood wasn't, you know, kind of coordinated or overseen by parents, there were, you know, every house almost had had an adult in it during the day. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, for various reasons in the 70s, women started going back into the workforce. Mm-hmm. And then Gen X raised in the 80s, you know, they're latchkey kids and proud of it. But
I'm so proud. Oh, my God.
But are they
so many
TikToks. Then are they compensating for, oh, you know, I wish my parents had been around? Or like where does this fixation on the, you know, we got to protect the kids and we have to make sure they have all of the advantages, you know, possible?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question. I think what happened is a couple things. One is... we now generally have smaller families and two incomes often, and that means that there's more money that can be spent on each child and free markets, right? The market has rushed in with all sorts of things that nobody thought were necessary before, from, you know, 3D video monitors for the baby, not to mention 3D video monitors of in utero.
Right.
But then there's classes. I mean, there are literally classes for kids 4 months old to start looking around and to start crawling and tumbling and being interested in the world. So if you can sort of undermine the idea, like the Fritos bag, that things are going to develop naturally and be okay. Your kid is going to be curious. Your kid is going to learn how to tumble. Your kid is going to be okay at camp. If you can undermine that, then you can sell parents the antidote. You know, here's a way to track them. Here's a way to check. Here's Kumon. Why not put your kid in this program? And then it sort of builds upon itself. This is why I don't blame parents, because if you want to send your kid outside and everybody else is at travel soccer, your kid is going to be bored at the park. And so then you feel, well, I guess I got to put my kid in soccer too, where he won't have anything to do. And so pretty soon that just becomes the norm. And then seeing a kid outside is like, well, what's that kid doing outside? And people are judging.
And then
you
looking through the window, you call the cops, right? Because there's a solitary kid wandering around or playing in his front yard. I mean, you write for reason, and like the greatest hit that you can keep playing every week from now to eternity is like the parent who gets arrested because their kid was caught playing in their front yard.
Right. The recent one that I had for you was a parents who were investigated four times for letting their kids, who were different ages because it kept happening. But basically there was a little one who was like three and then one who was like six and eight and they were playing outside and somebody calls. And sometimes it's done out of, I don't blame people. They're concerned. Right. They don't know. Are the parents nearby? In this case, the mom was, but they don't know. And they just want to make sure. They don't realize what this tripwire does, what it starts, this investigating, the coming to the home, the interrogating the kids and looking through the cabinets and into the refrigerator and, you know, sometimes more for evidence of neglect. But one of the problems is that we've been told if you see something, say something, and we're never told what's something. Right. And so the most famous, I'd say, one of the most famous cases of parents being investigated for neglect was the Métives in Maryland. It's about 10 or 15 years ago. They let their 10 and 6-year-old walk home from the park, got investigated. That was a big hoo-ha. And then it happened again, those little recidivists. Mm-hmm. And in the second case, they somehow released the 911 call. And it was a guy saying, hi, what's your problem, sir? Well, there's these children outside. What are they doing? Well, they're petting my dog. And it's like, well, are they okay? Yeah, they're fine, but aren't I supposed to? And it was clearly he thought like he was supposed to do something. He wasn't a jerk, but he didn't, but it didn't stop there. It's like it should have been, well, thank you for your concern. If they seem fine and they're not on fire, you know, and they're not, you know, anything, nothing bad is happening to them. They're just walking home and they stop to pet your dog. That's not anything that needs to be investigated. But unfortunately, because the precautionary principle, then it kept going up the
chain. Well, and I mean, did the 9/11 operator in that say, okay, you know, dispatch something? Because I could also see if you're part of the, you know, public safety industrial complex, the last thing you want to hear is, oh, so, you know, these two kids
so you let
were
them
seen
walk home and then
they disappeared. Yeah. And like, here's a 911 call where the operator is saying, oh, just don't worry about it. You know, why are you wasting my time?
That's actually the biggest problem of all. Not the 911 operator, but the fact that we cannot guarantee absolute perfect safety. Mm-hmm. And if something bad happens, we will rewind the tape and say, oh, there's your problem. Mm-hmm. It was her, as opposed to, wow, fate is fickle. The Lord works in mysterious ways. Mm-hmm. Once you have taken out the ability to see anything as something that you couldn't predict, that the world is not perfect, once you start saying that that's unfair and somebody is always to blame, then everybody has to cover their ass. Mm. And pretty soon you get this overweening state system. I mean, there's, I think, about 8 million calls to child abuse hotlines this year. The numbers are astronomical. If you're an American kid, I think your chances are like 37% that you will have a call made on your, you know, on your behalf to a hotline. And if you're Black, it's 53%.
And that's kind of unconnected to actual risk.
Right. No, most of these cases are closed out or whatever the word is, but that doesn't mean it hasn't, you know, terrified and traumatized.
Oh, yeah. No, like anytime, you know, when people say like, oh, it's
no big deal if you
merely get arrested but not charged, it's like this is an incredibly disruptive event.
Right. And it's not always arrest. Sometimes because there's the whole Child Protective Services thing. So you could be investigated and they close out your case. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you've been wondering, I'm going to be able to live with my kids anymore. Wait, can I tell you a story that was
just
so terrible? So, you know, we've passed reasonable childhood independence laws in 11 states now, and they say that neglect is when you put your child in absolute obvious danger. What is it? Obvious and serious danger, not just any time you take your eyes off them. So in South Carolina, where our law didn't pass yet, we had a guy testify. He was a foster parent to two children, including his son, who was 12 at the time, whose mother had really abused him with boiling water. It's just horrible. And then a daughter. And the daughter was 10, outside on the front lawn doing her homework. Somebody saw her, thought there was no one home. This was a kid who's like locked out or something, called 911. And he was investigated by the very people he was, you know, he's also like trying to adopt these right. children through Child Protective Services. Now they're running a study on him. And he thought that the 10-year-old might not quite understand what was going on, but he had to sit down with the 12-year-old whom he'd really rescued from this truly abusive family and say, I think it's going to work out, but there is a possibility that you won't be able to live with us anymore. The cruelty of it getting to that point is so unbelievable that you think, well, if this is an agency that's supposed to be protecting kids, has the best interest of the child at heart, they should have stopped.
Before we continue with the Reason interview, I want to ask you to help make this podcast and all Reason podcasts better. Please fill out our audience survey. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, and I'll give you a chance to win a $300 gift card. The link to the survey is in the show notes for this episode. It'll really help us out. And now, back to the Reason interview.
In the 90s, this anxiety about the kids, you know, we got to do something for the children, or it's always about the children, seemed to be coded left or liberal or left. And again, you know, that's somebody like Hillary Clinton, you know, who was, you know, considered
power. Yeah.
Now I'm curious. It seems when you see people who are constantly talking about pedophiles running everything, you know, this is roaming around the Epstein file stuff. But, you know, if anybody is saying, you know, there is a global network of pedophiles. Yeah. And, you know, and manage to keep it secret, except for these rare moments, et cetera. It seems to be coded right now, like anxiety over children being abducted or abused or, you know, it's kind of just destroyed by the world. What would explain, you know, that? Is it just free-floating anxiety? I mean, the right also seems much more upset about crime. This was something in 2016, Donald Trump, you know, or in 2017 in his inaugural address, he talked about American carnage at a time when crime rates were unbelievably low. And they went up a little bit since then, spiked during COVID and are coming back down. But the right is constantly talking about how, you know, a Benny Johnson, a big right wing influencer, was talking about how, like, he can't bring his family to Washington, D.C., because, it's just overrun with gang violence and things like that. Hmm. What would explain the shift from a kind of left-wing kind of concern to a right-wing over child safety?
I don't know, but I do hear two different things. When it was a left-wing concern, possibly it was more within the family, and the right-wing concern seems to be more outward, criminals running through the streets.
So we're like on a flyer here, but it's kind of that the left tended to be more suspicious of the family as the site or source of dysfunction, and conservatives are more like, oh, the world is breaking down around us and we need to protect the kids.
All I can tell you is that I'm not sure, and I'm not even sure if our breakdown of that is correct. But to bring it back to Let Grow and our reasonable childhood independence laws, they are usually have bipartisan sponsors because no one wants the government. Even if you're on the far left, you don't want the government telling you how to raise your kids. If you think that they're ready to walk to school, to play outside, to stay home alone for a little while, even you, you know, card-carrying leftists, not you, card-carrying leftists, are not going to want somebody to knock on your door and say, ma'am, I saw your child outside today. That's not, that's against the law.
So let's talk about Let Grow. This is an organization, a nonprofit that you started in 2017 with Jonathan Haidt, the psychologist, Peter Gray, a developmental psychologist, and Daniel Schuckman, an investor in New York.
And Daniel, and also Daniel spent 10 years as chairman of FIRE.
That's right.
Which fights for free speech.
So he's an interesting guy who has laid some very important bets on, kind of opening things up in society. What was Lecro's mission? And in the mm-hmm. TED Talk, you talk about, you don't just talk about, okay, things are bad. You have three solutions that come out of Lecro. But first, explain Lecro's mission.
So Daniel Schuckman and Jonathan Haidt were talking in, you know, the 20 teens about what they saw happening on campus, which was kids thinking that they were fragile, kids really thinking that if they were uncomfortable, they were literally unsafe, which is why the words were framed as safety. I'm not safe if Christina Hoff Sommers comes to campus. I need a safe room. I need a trigger warning. And what they felt was that kids aren't fragile, but they have mistaken this discomfort for something that they shouldn't have to deal with because they have not been brought up to be as resilient and open-minded as we would hope and as they would hope, really. But trying to change things when a kid is 18 or 19 is a kind of late-stage intervention. And so John had read Free Range Kids, which is my book. He knew me. He said, well, let's start a nonprofit together with Lenore that will, its mission will be to raise more competent, confident, open, ready for the world kids than this last generation that sort of bubble wrapped them. And so they came to me and I said, yeah, let's also bring in Peter Gray, who has written, who's a professor, as you said, who's written and studied the importance of mixed ages just playing together. You know, now we segregate everything by age, but, you know, throughout all of human history, it was the Peanuts gang. It was you and your friends on your bikes. It wasn't, you know, only the 7-year-olds and then separate from the 12-year-olds.
Right.
So when we started Let Grow, we realized that to a certain extent, we were thought leaders, but thoughts just sort of go from, oh, that sounds great. Oh, I remember my childhood. Oh, I'd love my kid to do that. But if they did, what if something happened? I could never forgive myself. The end. So the thoughts would keep going in circles. But the only thing that really changes people is action. So we wanted to create, we wanted to make it, our slogan is to make it easy, normal, and legal to let go of kids, to give them the independence that they need to thrive.
To have a free-range childhood.
But yeah, and John is always talking about how a collective problem, which is nobody knowing when they can send their kids outside, which brings us back to that, you know, the study at the beginning, 50% of kids, you know, 50% of kids have never even walked around their own neighborhood, right, without an adult. So how do you renormalize letting go? You have to do it collectively so that the parent who's doing it doesn't feel like they're crazy or they're going to be blamed or it's impossible or it's too dangerous. So the three things that we came up with were, one was to work to change the laws. And so far, we've changed the neglect laws in 11 states.
Right. So and that the name of that is the Reasonable Independent Childhood Law.
Or
that's
close.
That's kind of your model. Right. Yeah. What is
it's
the model?
It's the Reasonable Childhood Independence Law. We get it wrong, too, all the time.
Okay.
But the point is that most states have laws that are neglect laws that say, parents must provide reasonable or enough supervision or sufficient supervision, but you never know how much that is. And so this just narrows it to say, it's just you can't put your kid in danger.
Right.
Like
in
an idiot.
Obvious
danger, likely.
Danger.
Right, right.
Or likely, danger.
Right. So,
and 11 states.
11 states have passed
it. What's the biggest, or what's the most surprising state that has passed it?
I'll tell you, Virginia was a really great one because Virginia has, you know, it's very purple. And the governor was elected on a whole, you know, the whole state was up in arms about what should we do about the children.
Yeah.
Right? You know, how should they be
This
educated?
It was passed under Youngkin then?
Yes.
Okay, who won, or his victory is often attributed to him being in favor of more school choice, right? Putting parents in charge of their kids' education as opposed to teachers' unions.
All I remember is that the left and the right were really mad at each other about something about kids. I think it was schooling. Yeah. But they unanimously voted for this law. And it was sponsored by a Democrat and a Republican in both the House and the Senate. So that was a great state. Yeah. But then our first three states were red. I mean, it was Utah, Oklahoma, and Texas. And then it's like, well, is this a red state thing?
Yeah.
So then we thought, well, let's see if a blue or purple state likes us. And so we worked in Colorado. Colorado passed us. And we've been passed in Illinois and Connecticut, which are solidly blue. So it's really not a red state, blue state thing.
And that basically makes it, it gives parents a safe haven from kind of prosecution
right.
or getting hassled if they do these horrible things like let their kids
play
go to a, or go to a different aisle in the supermarket.
Yeah, right. Ma'am, yeah. I found your child in the cereal department.
You've got two other fixes that you're talking
yes.
about. Or, well, before we go off the law, it's in 11 states, and then who's in the pipeline? Who's coming next?
I wish I could remember. We have 8 states that have gotten in touch or that we're mm-hmm. dealing with, and I can only remember Pennsylvania. I'm so sorry. Maybe Kansas. I have a list. You can put it in the show notes.
Is what, you know, how do they reach out to you? Are they like, you know what, I'm just sick of my kids and I got to figure out a way to legally not see
right,
them for
right,
the
right.
rest of the day?
What can I do? How can I get away with something? Well, I'll give you an example. Georgia, the story about the mom who lived in small town Georgia. Mm-hmm. She had to take she had to take her older son to the doctor. The younger son was going to come along. He's 10. In the end, he decides, no, I'm just mm-hmm. going to stay home. She goes off and takes the son. The kid doesn't tell his grandpa, who lives in the same house, and decides to walk to town. And once again, somebody mm-hmm. sees him, calls the cops, and the mother is arrested in front of her family because she didn't know where her son was for that mm-hmm. hour or half hour that he was walking by himself to go visit the Dollar General, yeah. right? And say hi to his friend's grandma. That story was first reported anywhere in America mm-hmm. in Reason
right.
By me, because she found her lawyer through Reason, because the same, I write about this kind mm-hmm. of story a lot. Anyways, that story ricocheted throughout the world. People could not believe yeah. that a mom was arrested because her 10-year-old walked to town, a town of, I think, 480 people. And a lobbyist, I think like a healthcare lobbyist, reached out to us and said, I know that you have a law. I would like to work for you for free to get a that same law, the Reasonable Childhood Independence Law, passed in Georgia, because this is an outrage. So sometimes people come over the yeah. transom like that, which we love. But often it's an individual, or recently it's been a couple of people from different state representatives or mm-hmm. senators who have said like they've heard about it. The law is mentioned in The Anxious Generation, John's
right.
book,
yeah.
because it's one of the solutions. And it's not just that parents won't be investigated for neglect, but also that parents can breathe easy not worrying about that.
Yeah.
I mean, part of the reason, not a big part, but a tiny part of the reason that kids get so much less independence is because parents think, well, what if somebody thinks this, that I'm doing something wrong?
Right.
So,
and then you, two of the other solutions have to do with essentially with educational
yeah.
setups.
Yeah.
One is having schools stay open after hours for free play
right.
without yeah. screens or
yeah.
phones.
Yeah.
What do you have a catchy name for that?
We call it the Let Grow Play Club.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's catchy,
yeah. okay.
but that's what we call it. And the cool thing about it is that it's so simple. I mean, the kids are already at school. So even if your kids, even if you're living in a dangerous neighborhood where the parks are literally too dangerous to go to, the kids are at school. Let them stay and play. So many of the programs after school are structured.
Mm-hmm.
It's homework and then it's chess. It's homework and then it's, you know, soccer.
Yeah.
But it turns out that kids really need to organize their own games. They need to be with kids of mm-hmm. different ages so that they learn to be kind to the little kids and
right.
learn to look up to the big. You don't learn.
Yeah.
This is how it happens naturally. And they don't have a chance to do that, because if they leave school, either they're going home to a device,
mm-hmm.
we all know that happens, or they're off to an organized activity, which is fun, but it's a little like school again, because
right.
there's an adult in charge. And so if you have a place where kids can gather and they're not on their phones and they've got some balls and some cardboard boxes mm-hmm. and old tires and junk from the home, there's just so much that they can do. And
mm-hmm.
and I've watched play club after play club I've visited, and it's so great. It's just like being in the Peanuts comic strip.
Right.
With minus Lucy, maybe. People are just doing things and having fun, and it turns out they can organize their own soccer game. I've
mm-hmm.
seen this happen over and over again. It almost seems like magic, because we think that it needs that, you know, kids
yeah.
are off to soccer.
How widely is this being adopted, or where are you seeing growth and interest in it?
Well, a couple places. First of all, we have about 1,200 schools doing one of the Let Grow
mm-hmm.
Programs now. All our stuff is free.
Mm-hmm.
All our materials, our suggestions, everything mm-hmm. is free. But we have this cool thing. South Carolina has just become our lighthouse state, where I don't remember if it's the commissioner of education or the superintendent of education for the state has declared this is a let grow state. We want every school to do the let grow play club and also the let grow experience. And the let grow experience is where teachers give kids this homework assignment that just says go home and do something new on your own with your parents' permission, but without your parents. And this is the collective problem again. You don't know when you can let your kids go do anything. But now if everybody's sending their kid, you know, to the store to climb a tree or my kid made breakfast, then it becomes normal to see kids out and about. Kids themselves do stuff together. Let's go to the guitar lesson together. And then the only thing that rewires parents is seeing their kid do something. And it can be successful. Oh my God, it's so great. She made dinner for us. Or it can be unsuccessful. Everything burned. Or he got lost on the way home. Or oh my God, he tripped and he needs a Band-Aid. Even that's great. Because then you realize things don't have to be perfect for my kid to be part of the world.
Right.
And yesterday, I'll just tell you the story from yesterday. I was talking to the principal of a school that's been doing Let Grow, did it last year and is doing it again this year, the Let Grow experience. And when he first introduced it to the teachers saying, this is what we're going to do. Once a month, the kids are going to get an assignment, do something with your, you know, for your family, do something in the neighborhood, do something with a friend. And a teacher literally stood up and said, no, absolutely not. There's no way. And she herself had a five-year-old. And I think she was just thinking of like, I would never let my five-year-old ride a bike around. No. But a year later, and this I found out yesterday from this nice principal, you know, she lets her six-year-old walk to her friend's house. Because all you need to do is break the ice. You think the ice is this thick that it's like you're going to need a pickaxe, but really what you just need is the kid to go and do something and then the parent to see it. And it's the same principle as exposure therapy. It's great. The kid gets less anxious because they've seen that somebody trusts them and they can do it. And the parent gets less anxious because it's obviously fine.
Yeah.
It's better than fine. It's great.
Let me just to stick with Let Grow a little bit. Jonathan Haidt in The Anxious Generation has, you know, led the charge that, and he explicitly talks about how phones, smartphones have really wrought havoc on all aspects of society, but especially for kids, teenagers. Peter Gray, one of the other co-founders of Let Grow, actually on his Substack says, you know, that's really veering into moral panic territory, that it's being oversold. Do you find yourself mediating between these two, or where do you fall on the kind of free range parenting question?
I wish I brought this poem. There's a poem that somebody wrote like back in the 1920s. It's like how I think they're both so right. But what I really think is right is that when you're on your phone, you're not outside. You're not face to face with a person, you know, tagging, you know, running, doing all the things in the 3D world, and you're not exploring the real world, and you're not trusted in the real world. And so the goal of Let Grow is to make it normal for kids to be part of the world again. So we stay neutral on the phone issue for Let Grow, but we did do this amazing study. This is why I brought this graph. I'll tell you first. We had the Harris poll ask these kids, 8 to 12, if you had
so your
choice.
So you commissioned the Harris poll to
do a series
of questions. Yeah.
Right, which was great.
Yeah.
So one of the questions they asked was, if you had your choice of just playing outside, you know, with your friends, no adults, no structure, whatever, or being in an organized activity like soccer, ballet, whatever, or playing with your friends, socializing with them online, kids 8 to 12, what would you prefer? And I don't know if you saw the Atlantic article, and I don't know if anybody's going to be, not everybody's going to be watching this, but here's the graph.
Okay.
And this is,
read it first.
All right.
It says, how would you rather spend time with friends?
And the giant part of the graph, the 45% of the graph, says free play in person. And next at 30% is organized activity in person. And 25%, way less, is online activity. So the thing
and
that
that's 8 to 12-year-old kids.
8 to 12-year-old kids do not want to be online.
Yeah.
They don't even want to be in soccer nearly as much as they want to be playing outside the way you and I did. And what's amazing to me about this is that they've barely even experienced that, right? Maybe some Saturdays in the summer when there's no camp and no homework. So they are hardwired to want what we've been depriving them of. And we're so mad that they're on their phones all the time. Why are they always on a screen? They don't want to be on the screen. This same...
But as you say in the TED Talk, it's basically the only place they can go to be away from their parents.
It's the weirdly. Only place that they can go to have fun, have adventures, make things happen, succeed, flirt, and mm-hmm. enjoy life because they're on lockdown. As we discussed before, you know, most of them can't even walk around their own neighborhood without an adult. But you can go to Mars yeah. online. You know, you can go to ancient Greece online. And so if we want kids offline, we have to open the door. Mm-hmm. And opening the door is what Let Grow has yeah. been and always will be about, giving kids the opportunity to be part of the world, thinking that they are competent, thinking that they're not perfect, the world is not mm-hmm. perfect. That's okay. We're not going to wait till there's no crime and no cars and no concerned parents until we let them out. And once you do, then you start renormalizing the childhood that they somehow, even in their lockdown souls, are longing for. It's like a starving person knows that they want food. Right. They want a childhood.
So even when they're in the open air prison of Minecraft, they really would rather be outside.
For sure.
Let's very quickly talk about how you, before you became this eminent change maker who is, you know, destroying public schools all over the country and letting children play right, wherever right. they want, you know, in
and
traffic.
And taking down Frito-Lay in
yeah,
the process.
And, yeah, right. and going up against corn chips. you were called the world's worst mom.
Yeah.
Because in 2008, you let your son, your 8-year-old son then?
Nine.
Or 9-year-old son. Take the subway in New York by. What prompted you to do that?
I was trying to think how I could take down Frito-Lay.
Yeah.
I played right. the long game.
Okay. Yeah. And now there it is, right?
Yeah. 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 No, now, what happened was that I actually was a newspaper columnist back then. And I looked
for
at
the Daily News.
Actually, I'd lost my Daily News job by then. At that time, I was at the New York Sun. But okay. I looked at old columns that I'd written for the Daily News, and I saw ones from when my kids were like 4 and 6. And it was like, I let my kids go to the, they're boys. I let them go to the bathroom without me when we're at the theater, you know, come sue me. And then I saw one when they were a little older. I let my kids play in the courtyard without me, you know, come arrest me. So
right.
I'd had this streak of thinking that kids were probably safer and smarter and stronger all along,
yeah.
but it was that one column, I think because it involved the subway.
Yeah.
That made
Do you, it. You grew up in Chicago, right?
Suburbs.
Suburbs
man,
of Chicago.
Yeah.
So in what, like 60s, 70s, 80s?
Yeah.
Do you remember your first experience of like where you were like, I'm going out on my own?
I don't remember my first experience, but in junior high and high school, I would take the train, the elevated mm-hmm. train, to downtown Chicago and wander around. I don't think a lot of other kids did. And I would go into...
This was not a great time for Chicago either,
it
right?
It seemed great to me.
Yeah,
I was in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was so exciting. Yeah. And I would go get a malted and I would wander around the Hilton and all these cool old buildings, taking pictures, which then you had to develop in the darkroom. Mm-hmm. And I was exhilarated by the city and the independence. Mm-hmm. And my mom did not say no.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever talk to her about that?
No, it was just part of my childhood. It's like, oh, I'm going to go downtown today. Mm-hmm. She probably had to drive me to the train. But it was just, you know, the world is a very enticing, exciting place. Mm-hmm. And kids are longing for it.
Right.
And they really want to be with other people and part of it. And we, in our desire and our understandable desire, we've been told by the culture that your kids shouldn't walk home alone. Your kids shouldn't, you know, do anything without you there. They're too endangered. You're too lazy if you're not there. But once you do let go, it's a brave new world for your kids and for you.
Is, you know, this obviously you're pursuing this on a kind of intellectual or a pedagogical level, on a legal level, et cetera. But it's profoundly a cultural question. Is there like, you know, and what I'm going to ask is there like the ultimate Let Grow movie or novel or song, you know, because I'm thinking of, you know, there were moments in film where like, you know, there's a movie from the 50s called Night of the Hunter where two kids are running away from Robert Mitchum, who is a very ominous, horrifying figure. And that's you know, it captures something about childhood, like where you're afraid of the world. Mm. But then, you know, by you know, in 1976, The Bad News Bears came out, which yes. is kind of a weird movie to talk about in this context.
Movie, yes.
But, you know, that is about latchkey kids who, yeah. you know, all the parents are divorced and, you know, the world has broken down so much that a woman, you know, a girl is on the little league team because she's a good pitcher, et cetera. The coach is an alcoholic.
Right, right.
Pool cleaner. But there were movies, you know, I think in the same year, something like Pretty Baby came out with Brooke Shields, where she's a virgin who's being auctioned off in a New Orleans whorehouse in turn of the century.
Probably not the
ideal
let grow movie.
Yeah. But no, yeah, that one might go, that pushes it right. too far, right?
right.
But there was this celebration of, I don't know if it's childhood independence, but there is something about autonomy in 70s culture.
No, I'm sorry. There's something about autonomy yeah. throughout literature,
yeah.
throughout the movies. Every Disney movie, the mom dies, mm-hmm. you know, the dad disappears,
right.
and kids have to make their way. All the exciting books for kids are concentrated on mm-hmm. kids. Even we were talking before about Peanuts. The
yeah.
parents are wah-wah in the
yeah.
background. Nobody ever thought that a movie about parents just with their children, taking them to the library, and then we're going to go for, go see a movie, and then we're going to go to do your homework together. That's not a great movie. The excitement comes from a child often being challenged or scared mm-hmm. and dealing with it. I'd say the ideal movie is Stand By Me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then I was thinking books. Every book for kids that's fun has the kids doing things. I mean,
yeah.
I once had a contest for come up with the name of a, you know, change the name of a book. A children's classic book to a one for the helicopter era, and one was like, oh God, Harold and the Purple Sofa, you know, oh, the places you won't go,
right.
My Side of the Minivan. Because My Side of the Mountain is like one of the greatest books
yeah,
ever.
Could you explain that? It was also made into a Disney movie as well.
My Side of the Mountain?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It's a kid goes off and lives by himself in the Catskills. For half a year, mm-hmm. he makes his own clothing out of a skinned deer. How does he know how to do
right.
all this
and
stuff?
He's like lives, from Westchester.
He lives in a tree.
Hollows out.
Yes,
and
he makes friends with like the otter there or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's amazing about that book, and also from the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Bessley, mm-hmm. Frank Wheeler, where two kids go and live in the Metropolitan Museum, is like there isn't an all points bulletin
right.
put out for them when they're 5 minutes late from school. So
is that, you know, those are both kind of big baby boomer texts, really,
yes.
right? And is it partly,
busted.
Well, no, but what I mean by that, especially in an era where boomers are, you know, are the villain, were the arch villain, and, you know, were those fantasies, because in fact, the baby boom culture, you know, baby boomers grew up in a unparalleled, unprecedented wealth
yeah.
with, you know, suburbs became the place where most people lived, and they were relatively safe and manicured. And that was, in its own time, that was the yearning to be free from kind of conformist or kind of a sort of soft lockdown.
Maybe. I think this yearning to be free thing is yeah. pretty basic throughout all of history mm-hmm. and all of humanity. Peter talks about studying, mm-hmm. Peter Gray talks about studying hunter-gatherer tribes. Mm-hmm. And basically, by the time you're three and you can toddle off, you're running after those cool six-year-olds.
Right.
You want to be part of that. You don't want to be home with mom.
Yeah.
So I think that's just a human drive.
Are you optimistic that, you know, the let grow philosophy, I mean, it's obviously gaining ground since you've started the organization, but like, you know, can you foresee a tipping point, or, you know, how does that happen?
Well, I think it happens by these collective actions that we've suggested. Mm-hmm. The fact that all our stuff is free mm-hmm. makes it pretty damn accessible. And so the fact that you have all of South Carolina is going to start giving kids a homework assignment, go home and do something new on your own by yourself, seems pretty good. And I wrote down, I got an email yesterday from our school account manager who said that it's only 1 o'clock today, and she'd already talked to educators in Sweden, Morocco, India, and Canada, not to mention the United States. And I thought, oh my God. I mean, that's, you know, there's some buy-in.
It's going to be wild in the streets, right?
It is.
And
yeah, right,
it
right,
was
right.
in the next
watch
5 years or so. Lenore Scanese, the head of Let Grow, thank you so much for talking to Reza.
Thank you, Nick.